And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
What's good, everybody? Pete and Nick back with you, NHL Fantasy on Ice, for our annual sports betting preview for the upcoming season. Really excited to get to all the odds and see where there's some appeal and some different places. What's going on, Nick? We got a great guest today as well.
Yeah, exactly. Fired up for this episode. He's the host of Line Change. It's Mike Leboff from the Action Network. What's going on, Mike?
Not too much, guys. I'm really excited to get the season started. Obviously, the Matt Barzal signing was good news for me as an Islander fan, and I'm just really excited. I think that this betting board, like the way that the market is shaped up over the offseason, provides us with a lot of interesting teams to talk about.
And such a big offseason in terms of player movement, the biggest that I've ever seen working for the league, hands down. So how do you attack this thing from the start of the season, whether it's futures-wise or plucking a couple of teams early on in the season? Some of the most improved teams out there, of course, the Ottawa Senators, the Detroit Red Wings, the LA Kings, adding Fiala, and then those Calgary Flames with everything they lost, they somehow got a little better in the process.
Yeah, I think Ottawa and Detroit, they're sucking up a lot of oxygen in these markets, and rightfully so. Like, you should be excited if you're a Red Wings fan or you're a Senators fan. We kind of saw this with the Devils last year too, where just that offseason hype usually makes the team too expensive relative to like where their actual level is. I think that's kind of happened with Ottawa and Detroit, but I don't know if it's happened with a team like Calgary, which is funny because they were 22-1 before Gaudreau and Tkachuk left. The market was kind of assuming they're going to leave and obviously couldn't assume that what was going to come next. You can't bake that into the number. And then when those moves did happen, they shortened from 22-1 to 18-1. That's nothing. Like, this team is still ticks every box you're looking for out of a favorite. A lot of people are focusing on the Avalanche to repeat. Then you got the Maple Leafs, the Panthers, the Hurricanes, the Lightning kind of at the top of the board. And then there's this little jump to the Oilers, and people are talking about the Oilers a lot more than the Flames, I think. So naturally, somehow, although we're talking about Calgary in terms of what they did in the offseason, we're not really talking about them in the same kind of group as those other true favorites. I would make Calgary the second best team in the entire league behind Colorado right now, just as looking as for a team that's built to win a Stanley Cup, right? They might not put up 110 points in the regular season, but they don't need to. This is a team that is so deep. They've got the goalie, they got the coach. The top six is great. They're deep down the middle. Calgary ticks every box. And at 18-1, I think that's going to be the highest number you're going to see on Calgary throughout the entire season. I don't see that thing going anywhere higher.
Speaking of value, plus 30,000 for the Arizona Coyotes to win the Stanley Cup. How many pops would you need to make that bet? No, I'm kidding. You look at value, I think it's scattered across the board. I'm not sure the value is there right now in Colorado. Could you maybe speak, to maybe the average or the casual bettor out there in terms of value and when, you know, it's the right time to place a bet? Because the Leafs are a team that come up a lot. There's a lot of money pouring on them, but you've got to pick your moment in your spot, right?
Yeah, I think so. Colorado and Toronto are good examples. When you're being priced like they are, the market's saying basically everything's going to go right for this team. So as a bettor, you want to think, okay, if I'm betting into this number, I'm assuming a great season, another great season from Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner. I'm assuming this team's going to stay healthy again. I'm assuming good goaltending. Colorado, you're assuming Alexander Georgiev and Pavel Francouz can kind of pick up where Francouz and Kemper left off. Whereas if you look at the deeper odds, teams like, you know, between like the 30 and 100-1 odds, you're thinking, okay, the market's telling you not much is going to go right for this team, or a lot has to go right for it for you to be interested in betting on them. So let's use the St. Louis Blues, for example. I think that they're a great bet, 40-1. The market's telling you, we're not sure that as much is going to go right for this team that did last year. But what went right for them last year was based on their personnel, their roster. They are a very talented offensive team. So they led the league in shooting percentage and they didn't have great underlying metrics. So people are automatically assuming that team's going to regress. But if they don't, where's the ceiling, right? Like, the ceiling is that they're going to be the second best team in the Central Division behind the Stanley Cup favorite. So like you said, you're trying to pick your spot with Toronto and Colorado. You're already seeing the high watermark of their price, right? Colorado is going to go into the playoffs probably around the same odds, unless something crazy happens, that they are right now. Toronto, they're probably going to go into the playoffs with the same odds that they are right now. St. Louis, if they get into the playoffs, they're going to be 20-1. So you want to pick, you're right. You want to pick your spots, and the teams that are deeper down the board are the ones you want to get involved in now. Whereas the teams at the top, you can probably pump your brakes and wait to see like, okay, what if there is an injury, then you can buy back in.
I mean, we've talked about it so many times the past couple of years, but this year, especially, I just don't get it. I know that the money's on Toronto, but I just don't see it this year. I feel like they get considerably worse each passing year. They had a great chance last year, Mike, to get over the hump against Tampa, and they blew it. And now they have a shaky goalie tandem with Samsonov and Murray. John Tavares is already injured. They lost Mikhaev, right? The defense, they're contemplating putting Mitch Marner on defense. I mean, again, I've asked you this before, but am I missing something with why people think that Toronto, why would they would put their money on Toronto getting over the hump this year?
Yeah, it's you're paying a Toronto tax, which is what you do in, you know, the NFL with a team like the Cowboys, the baseball with the Yankees, like when with these kind of popular teams, these teams with, you know, outsized fan bases. I mean, Nick can go outside, turn on a radio or something, and he'll hear people talking about the Leafs and if they're going to win the Stanley Cup or not every day of his life. So that is just naturally going to seep into the market. Like people will bet Toronto because you like for me, I bet the Islanders every year because I'm an Islander fan. That's not an uncommon thing. So think about how many Maple Leafs fans there are compared to Islander fans who are just like, you know what? I'll just have a little dabble here. So bookmakers know they're going to take money. So that's the first thing. And like you said, I think this, when you're looking at Toronto, they're being priced like everything's going to go right. Murray and Samsonov are going to work. Matthews, Marner, another all-star season from both of them, perhaps MVP seasons, and the depth pieces that they added are all going to work out. The defense is going to hold up. If that doesn't work out, that's the Leafs are much more vulnerable to things going wrong, I think, than they were in the past two seasons, right? They're not playing in that North division, and they're not playing in a division this season where there's four teams that you can pretty safely say they're not going to make the playoffs. This year, you're looking at four teams that are good: Florida, Tampa, Toronto, Boston. And then you're looking at two teams that are like, yeah, they could, I could see them. They'll be nipping at the heels, and then an improved basement, right? Like Montreal is better, Buffalo is better. So the margin for error is just not there to want to get involved on a team like this. So it's a complete pass for me. I wrote a preview for actionnetwork.com where I rank all teams from 32 to 1 based on market sentiment, the most overrated in the betting market to the most underrated. And I have the Leafs at 32 and the Capitals at 1 for different reasons.
Yeah, I was going to pump that piece. And Mike, it was fantastic work and I really, really enjoyed it. So I think we should get to the top two teams and how you feel about them. And they're a bit surprising in my opinion, but it's Washington number one and Boston number two. Explain.
Yeah, I look at it. You can read power rankings all over the place. So I try to look at it from a different view, which is just how the market is, how the perception of this team is kind of seeping into the market. And let's start with Washington. Everybody, as soon as that playoff series ended against the Panthers, the playoff series that Washington frankly should have won if they had better goaltending, everyone was out. They're like, that was it. That was Ovi's last kick at the can. Nicholas Backstrom's hurt. Tom Wilson's hurt. There's no way this team's going to get back to the mountaintop. As soon as that happens as a better, as soon as you start to hear like a media narrative like that be accepted, you should think, okay, I'm automatically, there's going to be some value on this team to buy back. It's, you know, a buy low spot, classic buy low spot. And Washington, frankly, improved in the offseason. Dylan Strome, Connor Brown, I think we're expecting decent season from Connor McMichael, maybe Hendrix LaPierre. Like, that middle six could be improved if Anthony Mantha stays healthy too. So I'm not concerned about Backstrom and Wilson being out and that sinking them. And I think their defense is underrated. John Carlson is a rock. Dmitry Orlov is a rock. And I like the guys around them. And then the goaltending is much, much better. Darcy Kemper, or should be. You know, we never know with goalies, but Kemper and Lindgren, I'll take that over Samsonov and Vanacek. So as soon as the kind of hockey world agreed, Washington, I'm done with them, I knew right away as a better, you know, I'm going to be hitching my wagon to this team.
Darcy Kemper, not many people realize, he leads the NHL in save percentage since 2017-18, even better than Andrei Vasilevsky. And for anybody that was critical of him last postseason, remember, he was playing through an eye injury. He had to retrain his vision and stuff like that. So give him a lot of credit for getting Colorado over the hump, and certainly has a chance to be close to as good, I think, if he's healthy with the Washington Capitals. One team from the East, Mike, that really jumps out to me this year. I know Nick has been on them in the past. I'm picking them to win the Stanley Cup this year. Carolina Hurricanes, getting Brent Burns, getting Max Pacioretty. Pacioretty's injured, but could rejoin the team around the midseason mark. with an already strong core that has been looking for that additional offense to finally break through and make the Cup final. Do you think this could be the year for the Hurricanes to get the job done?
Yeah, for sure. It can be. I think that they're getting a little bit too much love in the market just because of their surroundings. Playing in that division is tough. You can question the goaltending because you need Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta to stay healthy for a full season again. You're going to be missing Pacioretty. And when they traded for Pacioretty, I was like, you know, that's a great move. That he's the perfect fit for this team. They just needed someone who you can rely on to finish a chance. Mm-hmm. And then he gets hurt. And now you're talking, okay, we still have the same problem, basically. Even if I like Seth Jarvis, I know everybody likes Seth Jarvis to take a step forward. I like Brent Burns and Jacob Slavin as a pairing because you can let Burns do what he does best and Slavin will take care of, you know, the defensive grunt work. But I think when you're looking at the top of the board, you know, Carolina 10-1, and then, you know, Nick touched on Boston, they're triple the odds. And I know Boston has just basically tread water for the first couple months of the season. But what we've seen out of the Bruins is once they get these guys back, the cavalry back, they're going to be one of the best teams in the NHL, and they should have enough runway to just get into the playoffs. I like the goaltending tandem there. So I think you look at Boston, you look at Carolina. If you ask me, would you rather bet Carolina at 10-1 to win the Stanley Cup or Boston at, you know, 28-1? I will take Boston all day long, even though I will acknowledge Carolina has the better chance to win the Stanley Cup.
Bottom line, we're looking for value, right? I like Tampa plus 1,200, Edmonton plus 1,500, Calgary plus 1,600, St. Louis, as we mentioned, plus 3,000. Fade the Kraken was a line I created last year, and I would fade them at every opportunity in the betting world. Let's go around the table. Pete, how are you approaching the Seattle Kraken in year two? I think they're going to be sneaky. I don't know why. I got that feeling.
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to be a lot closer than last year. I don't think Grubauer is as bad of a goalie as he looked last year. Certainly isn't maybe as good as he looked. Maybe it was a little fool's gold what he showed us in Colorado and Washington over the years, over different sample sizes. But with the two rookies, Beniers and Wright, with kind of those guys that were playing on the top line or more second line guys this year, like Eberle and McCann and Yanni Gourde. And then, Mike, you have the addition of Burakovsky and Oliver Bjorkstrand, two quality secondary players that I think have deserved top flight roles for quite some time. So I think they are actually a team where last year, Mike, we were saying they're being overhyped because of the Golden Knights' success. Now they're being undervalued. I think they could surprise potentially.
Yeah, I think last season was a funny example of how sometimes people who are in betting markets or looking at, you know, in the weeds with numbers kind of can get too cute, and everyone got way too cute with the Kraken and thought they were going to be much better than they, you know, realistically, like, remember, the game is a game played by human beings, and this is an expansion team, right? Like,
yeah,
that's not going to be an easy thing to adjust to. And a lot of people who, like myself, who just kind of project that, you know, like, oh, the numbers are saying this team's going to be okay, like, don't take that stuff into kind of consideration as much as we should. I think that's a lesson I learned last year. And I thought the Kraken were going to be better than they were. I was wrong. I know a lot of other people in, you know, modeling communities had them even, you know, much higher than I did. And now the buyback comes, right? Like, we get a chance to buy back and kind of adjust our expectations to this team, which is, they'll probably be, yeah, like 17th or 18th best team in the league. Maybe that might be even a little high, but they're going to, I think, provide you value on a day-to-day basis as game to game, because you'll be getting good prices on them. Grubauer just won't be as bad as he was last year. Like, you know, you want to make one bold prediction, Philip Grubauer is not going to be the worst goaltender in the league next year. So I like the Kraken from that standpoint. I think the Pacific too, you know, the Kings, I think the Kings are good. I'm not saying that I think they're more likely to make the playoffs than they're not, but you can catch the Kings. You can catch, you know, if things don't go right for Vegas. So they're not a terrible shout as a, you know, make the playoffs outsider. But if you're going to do that, like, maybe think about betting Dave Haxtell to win the coach of the year. If he doesn't last the season, maybe someone else, whoever replaces him, because they get in, that coach will definitely be on the ballot.
Speaking of coaches, let's look at the award, Jack Adams, and start this awards conversation. I went on Mike's podcast, Line Change. Again, check it out to talk more about awards. But I want to kind of sum it up with you here. This is where you think there's an opportunity to capitalize on some of these improved teams around the league, specifically in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah. So, you know, a great betting lesson is, a lot of times markets are correlated. So to make the playoffs, market is sometimes correlated with Jack Adams, especially when you're talking about surprise teams, when you're talking about Ottawa, when you're talking about Detroit, for sure. If Derek Lalonde or DJ Smith get their teams to the playoffs, they're probably going to be the favorite to win coach of the year. Both coaches have taken money since we last spoke, Pete, but they're still being offered, you know, 35 to 1, 40 to 1. So if you like Detroit to be a surprise team, make the playoffs, they're being priced at 3 to 1. If they make the playoffs, Derek Lalonde is going to get a lot of love to be the Jack Adams winner. So you might as well just take the 40 to 1 on him instead. Same logic applies, I think, to DJ Smith in Ottawa. So I would just, you know, suggest that, like, think about the narrative you're betting into when you're about to make a bet on to make the playoffs. The Winnipeg Jets are another one that stands out. If you think the Jets are being slept on a little bit, I think that's a fair argument. Why not just bet Rick Bonus, you know, 35 to one, you know, those are the things you want to think about, because that's bookmakers aren't, they can't correlate those prices perfectly. Right. I think when it happens all the time, we always talk about it on our playoff preview with Conn Smythe. The Rangers were like 18 to 1 to win the Stanley Cup, but Igor Shesterkin was 35 to 1 to win Conn Smythe. The Rangers were not going to win the Stanley Cup without Shesterkin winning the Conn Smythe. So take the, you know, double the price there. Just always think about those things before you're making a bet. Am I passing up value elsewhere by making this bet?
Yeah, I'm down with the Rick Bonus conversation. That's the guy I've been pimping since day one here in the offseason at plus 3,000. Yes, please. I just think with the Jack Adams guys, like, it's never really the person you expect. You know, Bruce Cassidy's leading the way, Gerard Gallant, Jared Bednar. Like, these are coaches on upper echelon teams. I think you'll find more value in teams that surprise, because we all love that underdog story, right, Pete?
Definitely. And if you can throw something on Stevie Y to win GM of the year, by all means, right? Yeah. I mean, you were talking about Lalonde and with the young core they're building there. It's going to be exciting to see a lot of those guys on the ice at the same time on the first power play. I have Mo Sider as the fifth ranked defenseman for the Norris Trophy. I think that's a nod to where Detroit is going in the next year or two, potentially as early as this season. So, yeah, it's exciting. And then Buffalo, too. Like, if Buffalo were to come out of nowhere and make the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they could be literally, you could see Dahlin go up the echelon to the Norris conversation. You could see one of those many rookies they have be in the running for rookie of the year. You could see Don Granato have a glimmer for coach of the year, right, Mike?
Yeah, and I like one of the Buffalo rookies a lot as a long shot in that market. Owen Power is the one of the betting favorites. Then Jack Quinn is kind of in that mid-tier. He's around 16 to 1. He's in the teens. So right away, that's sucking up a lot of value. You can't make three Sabres under 20 to 1. JJ Paterka is coming in at 50 to 1. Whether or not he gets the opportunity that those two guys get, it remains to be seen. But you're when you're betting someone at 50 to 1, you're taking on that risk. 80 points for Paterka in the AHL last year in 80 games. And I mean, that's a tough league to play in. You're with the travel, the three games at three nights, that you're playing against, you know, veterans who've been around the block, who, you know, don't care that you're JJ Paterka skating around the ice. So he's already shown he can adapt to this pro style North American game. If he gets the opportunity, and I know that the Sabres are really high on him, so I think he'll get every chance. I like his odds at 50 to 1. The other guy I like there is Dylan Holloway. He's 75 to 1. Last time I checked, I know he scored a hat trick the other night in the preseason. And I thank God I bet that before that game, like just serendipitously had locked in that bet the morning of. But because I got a little nervous that hat trick was going to get people, you know, talking too much about him. And, but you're betting into, okay, he's 75 to one. If he plays with McDavid and Draisaitl, no matter what, those odds are going to be worth it, because you're going to be able to pick up the scraps, and you play with McDavid and Draisaitl, the three of us will, you know, come close to 30 points. So then you put in a NHL caliber player, he's going to double that easily. So I like Holloway as a long shot in that market too. And it's a similar thing where there are some markets, it's similar to Jack Adams, what, like Nick was saying, there's some award markets where it doesn't really make sense to go down the board. Rocket Richard comes to mind. I think the Hart Trophy right now, a little bit in the Norris for sure, with Makar being, you know, the consensus favorite. But then with Calder and the Vezina and the Jack Adams, you basically just want to scroll right past the first six or seven names.
Yeah, pretty much. Again, you're looking to extract that value. And since you're on the topic of Norris, I got a couple guys that I'm thinking about. Aaron Ekblad at plus 1,100, Miro Heiskanen at plus 2,000. I think it's important to note that nobody's repeated for the Norris since Nick Lidstrom from 06 to 08 when he won three in a row. So what I'm telling you, it's likely not going to be Cale Makar. I think there's no value in looking at Makar this season.
Yeah, it's interesting because this market is basically saying, okay, you're basically trying to beat Cale Makar. If you can beat him, you know, good luck. And I think Ekblad has, and we always remind people when we're betting these, that human beings end up voting these awards. So Ekblad has a storyline built in, right? He's coming off a couple injuries and he lost his partner, Mackenzie Weegar. So if the Panthers are good, it likely means that Ekblad has a good season. So I think you're getting decent value even at 11-1. I think that the Flames are a good team to target in this market as well, because they'll just be so good defensively. If like someone like Noah Hanifin continues his ascent, I like him as a long shot in this market. But other than that, like it is hard to, you know, close your eyes and imagine it not going to Makar or Yossi after the seasons they had last year. So the Norris is probably going to end up being the one award that I don't have a bet on this season.
Okay.
And speaking of defensemen, what are your thoughts on me having Jake Sanderson ranked ahead of Owen Power in my top five rookies for the upcoming season? I know that they're both sitting behind a superior defenseman right now with the Sabres and Dahlin and the Senators and Shabbat. But again, Shabbat has an injury history. I feel like if Sanderson, who was better than a point per game last season at North Dakota, if he gets that opportunity, it might be his for the years to come, Mike.
Yeah, I think Sanderson, my partner, my co-host on Line Change, Nick Martin, really likes Sanderson as a Calder Trophy bet in the 20s, because the opportunity is going to be there for him. He should have every chance to get a top four role and some power play time and be the kind of yin to Shabbat Yang on that blue line. So I like to call from a betting perspective, for sure. And we'll see, like, it's just, you know, rookies, regardless of their position, are it's really tough to project them, but then you throw in the position of defense, it takes forever for these guys to kind of realize their potential. You just never know, but that's being baked into the market, that uncertainty. So you're getting a good number here on Sanderson.
Speaking of baking, the Rocket Richard Trophy race, it's Austin Matthews to lose, we think. Obviously, I think if you're going to sprinkle some money here, you look at Drysdale, you look at Ovechkin, Kaprizov. The wild card name I would throw into the conversation, Pete, is contract year David Pastrnak. And I know Boston's banged up right now, but I think there's actually a bit of value there. Although, again, I must preface by saying I do think Austin Matthews will win the Rocket Richard again.
Yeah, that's a pretty safe play. When I went on Mike's podcast, I was talking, though, about Leon Draisaitl and how good he's been in the goals category. And remember, all these other awards, right, Mike, like, are subjective, where Roman Josi could have the most points by a defenseman in 30 years and still not win the Norris Trophy because, you know, people were gravitating toward Cale Makar. Like, that's what could happen with the other award, right? So I think it's, you have to always look at it from that standpoint with the Rocket Richard, that if Austin Matthews deals with an injury and someone else explodes, like, if they finish first in the category, they win the award and it's not debatable.
Yeah, and I think Pastrnak is a really good shout. He's definitely on my short list here. I like Evander Kane as well as a, you know, 66 or so to one, you know, long shot, just because of the opportunity of where, who's going to play with. He should naturally have a chance at a breakout season or another one for him. But Pastrnak, contract year, no Marchand. So everything's going to be going through him on the offense. So if he's on song from the get-go, we're talking about pretty, if he plays, he's on form and he plays a full season, he feels a very safe bet to get to 50, which right away puts you in the conversation to win the award, assuming that, you know, no one scores 60 again or something like that. So Pastrnak is definitely on my short list, as is Evander Kane. And I think a lot of people are going to gravitate towards Kyle Connor in this market as well, which you're getting double digit odds. It's not terrible either.
Yeah, we had bold predictions. You can find our fantasy bold predictions and should go back and listen to our last episode on that topic. And we have myself and Anna duo. We said that Kyle Connor has a great chance to win the Rocket Richard. So we definitely echo your thoughts on that there. And just to go back to the topic of Cale Makar for a second, if you're betting Cale Makar, you should probably bet Cale Makar for the Hart Trophy, because it's the only darn trophy that he hasn't won to this point in his professional career, right? He won the Conn Smythe last year. He's won the Norris. He's won the Hobie Baker, right? It's crazy.
He kind of in a similar way to what I was talking about with the Capitals. Like, as soon as the season ended, everyone already had the narrative set on Washington, and everyone already had the narrative set on Cale Makar when he was skating around with that big trophy, the Conn Smythe. Okay, he won the Conn Smythe. The Hart Trophy is next. And right away, his odds, like, I was expecting he should probably be like 30-1 to win this award, because defensemen just don't win it. We haven't seen one since Chris Pronger in 2000. So just based off that, and the fact that who we'll be going up against, he should probably be a little longer if you're looking at true odds. But like you said, if you think he's going to win the Norris Trophy, I would just either split your stake or just bypass the plus 120 on him to win the Norris. You don't want to tie your money up in that, but 15-1 to win the Hart. If he wins the Norris, it's likely he'll be in the conversation to win the Hart. So another one of those examples of, if I'm going to bet this, let me take a look around the market and see if there's maybe something correlated to it that I can get a better number on.
I couldn't agree more. Call me boring, but I think the Connor McDavid vengeance tour will begin with the first game of the season, where he's going to be like, you know what? This is going to be the season. I'm going to get 150 plus points, and I'm not going to care if Auston Matthews scores 60 goals. I'm winning the Hart Trophy again. At plus 260, believe it or not, I think there's a bit of value there. I love Nikita Kucherov at plus 1,500 for the Hart. And how about some Jonathan Huberdeau plus 1,600 now with the Calgary Flames? He was in that convo last year. Just don't ask the analytics community, of course.
I wonder, Mike, if there's going to be some sort of off-season storyline, either a teammate affected by a departure or a player going to a new team, where someone could be in the mix for a Hart Trophy, like Johnny Hockey. If he gets the Blue Jackets to the playoffs, would he have a case for that award? He might, because he's going to have such a great ripple effect on that team. Huberdeau, of course, went there when the other guys left, and he's the savior because he signed on for an 8-year extension. Whereas you could also look down in Florida and say Huberdeau is not there anymore. If Barkov goes up and scores 100 points, and you know, he could win the Selke, and he could win the Hart potentially, right?
Yeah, the Selke is the one award market they never post, and I just really wish they did. Make a Patrice Bergeron.
There's one guy who wins it. Yeah.
Yes. You could just, you know, keep rolling over Patrice Bergeron and buy yourself a house. But yeah, I think so. I think the narratives in the Hart Trophy are really important. One narrative I'm playing into is Igor Shesterkin, after what he did last year. A lot of people are knocking that if a goalie puts up that kind of season, it doesn't win the Hart. A goalie's never going to win the Hart, at least in this generation of, you know, McDavid, Matthews, Dreisaitl, McKinnon. And I look at it from another way, which is, if he got the conversation going, that's step one, right? Like, he got the conversation going of, should a goaltender, are we overlooking goalies when it comes to voting on this award? We haven't seen one win since Carey Price in 2013. So I actually like Thatcher Demko as a really big long shot here at 200-1. And I like Ilya Sorokin at 150-1. The two of them are, you know, they're going to be, Sorokin is the third favorite to win the Vezina. Demko, where depending on where you look, is going to be like fifth, sixth, seventh. If they win the Vezina, which is the market saying is a realistic possibility, that means they've beaten out Shesterkin, they've beaten out Vasilevsky, they've beaten out Saros, they've beaten out the other one. You know, if it's Sorokin, beat out Demko, Sorokin. And that means they've had a stunning season if you're beating that caliber of goaltender. And if they both are in teams that, like with the Jack Adams, if they make the playoffs, it's likely that it's going to correlate to their play. And I think Demko, especially, he's going to be playing 60 games probably this season. So if the Canucks make the playoffs and he's on form, this guy's going to be at least in the peripheral of the conversation. And that's all you're asking for at 200-1. You're not expecting to win, right? Like you're hoping that ticket is still alive when we're talking about, you know, we're on coming around Easter into the playoffs.
And that leads us, of course, into the Vezina conversation. I just don't know if I can get to that level again, just, you know, wrapping up that Hart conversation where, as you mentioned, the numbers and the statistics don't favor a goaltender winning this award or anybody not named a forward. But I think you look at the Vezina specifically, we do like in this NHL world, guys, to spread the wealth. That's why I'm not sure Shesterkin's going to win it. I'm not sure Vasilevsky's going to win it. I like Sorokin. I like Demko. Contract here, Freddie Anderson. Maybe we can get behind him. The sexy name seems to be Jake Oettinger as well, Leboff.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of love. I thought his odds would be a little longer, but I don't think there's, you know, you can't really poke holes in that argument. He's on the upswing. So I don't mind Oettinger, but I like two other young goalies, one of whom the more and more I think about it, the more and more this is becoming my favorite bet of the season, which is Spencer Knight at 150-1 to win the Vezina. That's like around the odds that you're getting James Reimer at. Like, no disrespect to Reimer, but when you put the two of them together, we know which goalie has the upside here. So Knight, he's playing for a Panthers team that I have some questions about their defense, but if they're good, he's going to probably start at least 40 games. I think the contract that he just signed is kind of the Panthers tipping their hand a little bit, saying that we're going with this guy. We're going to try to figure out the Bobrovsky situation at some point. So I'm not too concerned about the opportunity with Knight anymore. The team should be good, despite my concerns. Like, the market is saying it's much more likely than not that the Panthers are, you know, hovering around that 100-point mark. So he'll tick that box, and he's got the upside. Like, his second half last season was stunningly good. Like, he was 6 goals above expected, 917 save percentage, 15 in his last 15 games down the stretch. He probably outplayed Bobrovsky in a vacuum, likely would deserve to be the number one starter. Bobrovsky, of course, played pretty well in that series. So it was the right decision, I guess, in the end, but you're buying the upside here. You're never going to see Spencer Knight in triple digit odds to win a Vezina again. So if his ceiling is what we thought it was going to be when he got drafted 15th overall, like, why aren't you just taking a flyer here on Knight at 150-1? And then another young goalie who I like, and this is much more about the team he plays for, is Jeremy Swayman at 50. Once again, some concerns about the opportunity with Ullmark there, but the defensive structure of that Bruins team is just so good that you can feel pretty confident that Swayman's save percentage will be around 920. If he plays enough, that usually gets you at least in the conversation. So at 50-1, Swayman, but that Knight number, I think, is just, you know, man, that's a really good one.
Well, Jeremy Swayman, third in the NHL in even strength save percentage over his first two seasons in the NHL combined. So, and could even have a higher win ceiling. So I like that play for sure. And then
Knight and Swayman a little bit is nobody's talking about them. Like, right. We talked about Spencer Knight because he signed the contract a little bit, but everyone's, when they talk about the goalies, they're talking about Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, Sorokin, Saros, Demko, Ottinger. You don't hear anybody talking about these guys. So the numbers just keep drifting and drifting. I mean, I really wonder how many people are in this, you know, market with me, especially Spencer Knight one. I might be alone and maybe a little crazy here, but I think you're getting a tremendous number here.
You're with just like Wilson, the volleyball at this point in time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Florida won the President's Trophy last year. So even if they decline by 6 or 7 wins, like we have them in our NHL.com goalie team win projections, you could still see them contending for the division title. And if Bob gets injured or he struggles, yeah, we all know the ceiling is that high for Spencer Knight. I think the Spencer Knight and Matthew Tkachuk wrinkles are the way that Florida could maybe overcome the regression of the regular season and then maybe peak at the right time if you're looking for Florida to win the cup. I actually have Florida in my final four this upcoming season, and I have them losing to the Hurricanes.
Yeah, they're a team that I think could struggle out of the gate. So going back to what Nick was saying earlier about when to buy, the Panthers are a team that if they do kind of take a little bit of time to gel, because losing Huberto and Uyghur, that's a big part of your core that's just been subtracted and then changed with Matthew Tkachuk, who's a much different kind of style of player than Sasha Barkov's used to playing with. But we know they're going to get there eventually. Like, there's too much talent on this team to not. So let's say the Panthers don't go off 10-0-0 like they did last year or whatever, and they, you know, start 6-5-1. The number's going to drift. Like, you might be able to find Florida at like 18 or 20-1, especially if, you know, other teams of their division get off hot, off and running. So, yeah, the Panthers, those, like I was saying with those favorites, if you're interested in them, just, you can sit back and wait, because the Panthers are not going to go into the playoffs at a much shorter number than where they are right now.
Moral of the story, pick your spots for sure. One of the teams I mentioned earlier on, the St. Louis Blues at +3,000 to win the Stanley Cup. I called them a wagon last year. Unfortunately, they ran into a wagon in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Jordan Binnington, I still have some major concerns when it comes to his longevity. Can he be the guy again for the St. Louis Blues to lead them over the hump? But how do you feel about the Blues heading into this season?
I'm really high on St. Louis. I think it's crazy how the Central is being priced. I get that Minnesota's underlying metrics are always good. They're a good 5-on-5 team. They've always been good defensively since Bruce Boudreau kind of came in there, and then Evason continued that. But the fact that the Wild are being offered, you know, in the teens, and the Blues are, you can find them as high as 30-40-1 is crazy to me. And then you look at the teams that they're kind of priced with in this little tier of theirs, it's Nashville, who I have a lot of concerns with. I know some people are high on Nashville as a Stanley Cup sleeper, but let's just think about what they did last year. They got an incredible season out of Soros. They got a generational season out of Roman Josi. They got these two resurgent seasons out of Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, and a, what, 42-goal season out of Philip Forsberg? And how many points did they make the playoffs by? Four. Like, if you get ceiling performances like that and you just get into the playoffs, what happens when you don't? So I don't know why Nashville is being priced above St. Louis in the market. And the same thing kind of goes with the Wild. I get that there's an argument to be made that Minnesota is a better team than St. Louis. I'll listen to that. But are they this much better? No. And you can have your concerns about Jordan Binnington. He's definitely a polarizing figure. But his two seasons before last, he was an above average goalie. He had that great playoff run. He was really good in the playoffs last season before he got hurt. And you look at his, if you're comparing him and Marc-Andre Fleury, like Marc-Andre Fleury gets treated like his, he's going to be good every season. But if you look, and this is the case with most goalies, not just Fleury, but it's rarely linear. He won the Vezina two seasons ago. He struggled last year. Even if you want to draw a line through that, because he was on Chicago to start, fine. But the season before he won the Vezina, he struggled too. His numbers were below average. So I don't think you can just automatically assume that a 37-year-old goalie is going to be really good. You know, I know the team's good. The team plays well defensively, and we all like this guy. He's a, you know, media darling. But if he doesn't play well, or if he gets hurt because he's 37, their backup's Philip Gustafson. Like, I know they got Jesper Wallstad in the pipeline, but we don't ever know with young goalies. So there's like a no really plan B here with Minnesota, and they're still a little weak down the middle. I don't get it. So just because the market keeps overhyping Nashville and Nashville and Minnesota, St. Louis will automatically drift. And I think you're spot on there. This is a team that a lot of people are out on, and just look at their top nine, even without Perron, man. Like, this is a really, really good team.
Right. The Blues have so much offense, they can mask anything that goes wrong on the other end. Whereas Minnesota, I feel like, is really going to need big time seasons from their two rookies, Kalen Addison and Marco Rossi. Rossi's looked good in the preseason, but the regular season's a different animal. I wonder about that team. I think Minnesota's floor is missing the playoffs. I've liked that group over the years, but they lost Kevin Fiala. There's a lot working against them right now.
What happens if Kirill Kaprizov gets hurt? You know, like, if he misses 20 games, well, that's a huge deal.
You're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why he should be a Hart Trophy candidate, is because he's like the single guy that could propel them to the playoffs potentially, but we'll see. If you're looking at over-unders for the upcoming season, is there anybody that's jumping out that, I know you were just talking right now, just in that central division, teams like Nashville, teams that Minnesota, that you believe are a little overrated? Does that apply in the over-unders market?
I think if I want to bet Minnesota under, I'd rather just bet them to miss the playoffs. They're, you know, 3 or 4 to 1 to do so. I think that's a decent number. I think Nashville, you're getting at like +170 to miss the playoffs. I think their over-under is around 96.5. So kind of correlated. So just take the +170 on them to miss the playoffs. A team that I actually like the under on, and I do this every year, is the team that I think is going to be the worst in the league to go under their total. That's the Blackhawks for me. You can also bet them, you know, 4 to 1 to finish with the worst record, or to win the wooden spoon, as they call it overseas. Their totals being set around 65.5, 66.5. And that might seem like really low, but if you look over the last 10 years, usually the team that finishes last in the league is much lower than that. It's very rare that they get to 60. So I like the Blackhawks under. And Nick, you kind of talked about the Coyotes. I actually want to park some time here and talk about
them.
Let's
do it, please.
Actually like Arizona more than the market. They've been beat up on because of the arena situation, the fact that they've been rebuilding. You know, yes, this isn't a strong roster, but once again, that sentiment's going to seep into the market. And I think, you know, you said fade the Kraken was your tagline last year, or calling the Blues a wagon. My tagline, I think, this year is Coyotes at home, because I just think that them playing in this home arena is going to throw a lot of people for a loop coming in. You're coming in from Dallas on a back-to-back, and all of a sudden you're playing in a 3,500 seat arena. That's going to take a second to kind of adjust to and get up for, maybe, and they'll be used to it at some point. So I think Arizona's unique arena situation kind of plays into their hands a little bit, especially, and this is the best part, you're going to get big prices on them, even at home, every night, because the market is so out on this team. And they're going to be the underdog in the 82 game season. They'll be an underdog probably 77 times. You can say they, maybe they're a little bit of a favorite over Chicago at home, over Philadelphia at home. Maybe they catch a schedule spot against like San Jose or someone. But you're going to get paid off on this team if they are above or, you know, what, 15 wins at home in the season. And that's not really asking all that much. So I like the Coyotes at home. That's just a something I think the market might not adjust to quick enough, kind of like we saw with Vegas, with the Vegas flu situation when they were an expansion team. We might just see something funky, and that should benefit the underdog, which will be.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like the new age Vegas flu in Arizona. I can get behind that. Maybe you're all over the Shane Gossesberg contract here. I get it. I'm with you, Buff. We talked about Vegas, man. Like, one of my hot takes, and we all know in this pod, I always have hot takes. The Vegas Golden Knights are not making the Stanley Cup playoffs. My column, .. But how do you feel about the Golden Knights entering this season? Because I'm still bitter about Max Pacioretty not being with the Golden Knights, man.
Is it just because he's your doppelganger? Or
yeah, is it just I've got that before, actually. Thank you.
He's I mean, I don't really know. I think the Knights are on this list with like the Sharks, the Stars of teams that I don't really have a good feel for compared to the market. Cause I like Jack Eichel as a Hart Trophy candidate. If you like the Knights to bounce back. And if you don't, then yeah, bet them to miss the playoffs. I just like the goaltending situation is strange. I think, you know, Logan Thompson, I think has some upside as a rookie of the year bet. I mean, if you really want to get crazy and just donate to a sports book, a Vezina bet, but, if he's good, Vegas gets in. If he's not, which is, I think, probably more likely, it's going to be a real scrap because then you're relying on Aiden Hill or Laurent Brossoit, who's been hurt, to pick up the pieces. So, yeah, I think there's like, I'll be honest, I just don't really have a feel. So, you know, I'll trust you here.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I mean, you can kind of anticipate trades too for some of these different markets too, right? Like when you look at the worst record in the league, the top two teams in my book that we already talked about, Arizona and Chicago. Chicago's probably going to trade Patrick Kane in his contract year. Arizona may very well trade their best defenseman, Jacob Chychrun. So, and then for Vegas too, like if Logan Thompson bottoms out there and, you know, maybe they'll be in the market for a goaltender if they have the cap space to do so. So something to look out for there. But Bruce Cassidy is going to be there. So I kind of trust that coach more times than not. And unless they get decimated again by injuries, I think they're going to be a much better team this year, Vegas. So maybe there's a glimmer on Logan Thompson and for coach of the year, Bruce Cassidy as well.
Yeah, Cassidy's, that's a good one too to talk about, like with the correlation between their odds on to make the playoffs. If they get in, Cassidy will definitely get some shouts. And you touched on worst record. My favorite bet in that market is actually the Flyers at 10-1. They're over under 74.5, talking about over unders. That would require them to get 13 more points or 14 more points than they did last year. And I don't think that they're better than they were last year. So yeah, I like fading the Flyers in those markets or backing them in the Wooden Spoon because this team, you could see it going sideways pretty quickly if they don't get off to a good start. And without Couturier, that top six is looking a little thin, to be kind. So I like a bet against the Flyers or a bet on the Flyers to win the Wooden Spoon and an under. But yeah, the Cassidy one is definitely another one to keep in mind for Coach of the Year.
Leboff, you're very quick, so I'll put you on your toes right away and ask you this. First coach to get canned this season?
My guess would probably be Dave Haxtell in Seattle.
Okay.
All due respect to Dave. I'm sorry. I bet on him to win Coach of the Year last year, so this is nothing against Dave Haxtell. It's just not, that's. But I would say, if, like, you're betting, you'll probably, you know, if you can find these odds, it's tough to find. You might want to look at a kind of like Gerard Gallant is like a really big long shot, because like the expectations, think about teams with really high expectations, and if they just completely fumble, like maybe like the Islanders did last year, nobody thought Barry Trotz was going to get fired. I know he wasn't first, but you know, these things change quickly. So that would be my long shot bet in that market, if you can find it.
We've seen the pinnacle of Gerard Gallant, right, when he brought Vegas to the Cup final in their first year, and last year, great start again. He had a great start in Florida as well, but then it's like the highs and lows. So unfortunately for him, that's been a storyline of his career. So yeah, maybe there's a glimmer on that for sure. So anything you're targeting in terms of props for this global series, or, you know, any storylines for this global series with Nashville and San Jose? The NHL season does officially start this Friday and Saturday between the Sharks and the Predators.
Yeah, I was shocked to see this line. I saw it was around plus 155 for San Jose, and then Nashville took more money. Like I've been saying, I'm pretty low on Nashville. I think even if San Jose's not a good team, like this is the first game of the season. It's being played in Europe. There's going to be some kind of funkiness to it that always kind of helps the underdog. And like, it's one thing to bet against Juuse Saros in January when he's, you know, fully up to speed and is in great form, but it's a whole other thing to bet against him, and a better thing to do when he's coming off an injury and it's his first game of the season. So I like the Sharks both days. Like I've seen plus 165 for Friday, and then I'm seeing plus 150, assuming that the backups start on Saturday. And when you look at the backups, if I think it's going to be Connor Ingram for the Preds and Kaapo Kähkönen for the Sharks, the difference between those two goalies, I mean, I think Kakan is probably better. So they're weirdly priced, which I think is maybe just the fact that it's the first game, but I like the Sharks. And my partner on Line Change, Nick Martin, he made a good case for Tomas Hertl to go over his shot total, which was set at plus 150 for over 2.5 shots. He is playing in his hometown. He averaged around 2.5 shots last season, so you're getting a pretty good number on Hertl there. Maybe a bet on him to be first goal scorer. That would be a nice story. But yeah, I like the Sharks. I'll probably be following Nick on those props as well.
I'm glad you guys brought this up. Last question for me. Does your strategy differ in the first couple weeks of the season? Like, for example, I love hitting the over because teams are a bit more loose until they really, really ramp it up defensively. That's why I like the over 5.5 to start too.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to avoid big favorites generally, but much more in the beginning of the season, although that strategy since the pandemic pause has not paid off at all. Last year we saw favorites clip at 65%, which is the highest since in the salary cap era. But I do assume that the market will adjust to that, and things in betting, like everything else in life, it's cyclical, and what goes around comes around. So I think you want to play into that variance a little bit, and you want to catch, like, you go into a season with opinions. For example, I think that the Winnipeg Jets are going to be underrated on a game-to-game basis. But if the Jets come out in those first 10 games and they are, and the market was right and I was wrong, I got to be able to just live with being wrong and kind of adjust. And I think in years past, I've been a little slow to do that. So I'm hoping to be a little quicker there. But at the same time, if you have those opinions and you're like, you know, I think the Jets can kind of upset their odds or play above their odds, and you're right, like, you're going to get paid. So I like to have those kind of opinions formulated before the season starts. So yeah, the Jets are definitely a team on my short list in that regard. Like I said, the Coyotes, that's going to be painful. And then I like the teams like the Senators and Red Wings a little bit too high, I think the market is on them. So they're a team that, like, if the Senators start slow, I'm going to be really quick to kind of jump back in on them when the market's like, oh, same old Senators, because then you're going to start getting them at good prices.
Mike, I'll give you a better send-off than what Barry Trotz got this offseason, but what are your thoughts on the New York Islanders from a betting standpoint, either to make or miss the playoffs, or Sorokin? You mentioned him being a Vezina, maybe even Hart contender if they do make the playoffs. Barzal bounce back season, maybe, certainly in fantasy, but wondering if there's any avenue that you could find with the Islanders that's catching your eye.
Yeah, I think so the Islanders are being priced as a coin flip to make the playoffs. And most people I've seen out there are betting against them in that market. And I think that makes sense. Like, if you're getting 50% odds on New York to miss the playoffs, I think we can probably all agree that's a little high. I think they're probably around 40% considering the division they're in. That said, like, you can think that and then also say at 55-1, which is the highest number I see out there right now, not a terrible cup future, because if last year was an outlier, if last year was just this Murphy's Law season, then, and they put it back together, we saw what the ceiling was. This team got within one goal of the Stanley Cup final. They took the Lightning to game 7 just a couple of years ago. So the upside is definitely there for an argument to be made that if you're going to back the Islanders, you should just look for the biggest number you can find on them to win the Stanley Cup and bet that one rather than the over or them to make the playoffs, because they'll definitely shorten considerably if they're in the playoffs. And like you said, I like Sorokin in the Hart Trophy. I think you can if you want to get cute, talk about Noah Dobson. If you want people to know that you know who Noah Dobson is, you can talk about him as a Norris Trophy sleeper. He's triple digits. And then, yeah, Barzal is, you know, he's interesting because he's still priced so short in, and he's 71, so it's not like that short, but his true odds to win MVP should be like 300-1, like where Nikolaj Ehlers is. But he's being priced like so much shorter because I think we all know like the potential's there. If things really do click for Matt Barzal, he's going to be a 90-point player and could maybe have like that Jonathan Huberdeau or Johnny Gaudreau leap where he goes from, you know, 75 to 115 overnight. So I don't think there's any value on Barzal to win MVP, but you know, he's definitely worth talking about when you're talking about a player who's at that deep of odds with that much potential.
And of course, check out our Bold Predictions podcast. We had plenty of Islanders conversations and looks. And to wrap, guys, Pete, I think it'd be a perfect time to introduce our upcoming collaboration and venture with the Action Network here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to keep doing two episodes a week for the fantasy conversation, but we're going to separate the betting stuff a little bit, right, Mike? With one episode a week, we're going to be dropping that on Mondays most weeks. We're really looking forward to working with you and having you on and some of the other guys in your crew, right? With Nick Martin and Johnny Laz, people like that. So excited to work with you this upcoming season, man. Thanks for hopping on today. And looking forward to listening to all your season preview episodes on Line Change.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And looking forward to talking to you guys much more often over the season. Monday morning is perfect, or Monday afternoon is perfect way to, you know, kick off the week.
All right, there you have it. One of the best in the biz, Mike Leboff of Action Network. Pete, can we start this season already, please?
Yeah, let's do it, man. I think we've gone through all our predictions. What's your cup pick, by the way, if we don't talk betting wise for the upcoming season? I gave mine away. I think you might be on the same wavelength as me, right?
I think we are. I have Carolina and Calgary in my Stanley Cup final. I can't believe I'm saying that. I have the Carolina Hurricanes finally prevailing. I know I'm going to eat my words on that, though.
I have Carolina over Colorado. I do still think that Colorado's floor this year in that Central Division is getting to the conference finals. And if you look at them maybe matching up against, say, a battered and bruised Oilers or Flames after that series, maybe could go seven games. Last year it only went five games and they still swept the Oilers. So again, Alexander Georgiev, the verdict is still out on this guy. Is it going to be more of a timeshare? Is he going to take the full reins? It remains to be seen, but I trust that core in Colorado. And they're getting the injuries out of the way early, right? With Landeskog and Nichushkin, those guys will eventually be back. So that's what I'm thinking with Colorado, getting back to the finals and then losing to a team of destiny with the Hurricanes.
Not to mention, Pete, there's a history and recent memory of teams going back-to-back, right? Pittsburgh number one, then Tampa two. So yeah, I wouldn't discount Colorado this season again.
Now they have a great chance, led by McKinnon, McCarr, Rantanen, the whole crew, even with their offseason losses of Kadri and Burakovsky. I think they'll be just fine. They got some young players in the pipeline too, right? They also added Evan Rodriguez. I really like Alex Newhook as a deep sleeper, breakout guy in fantasy. And then, you know, remember to check out the other podcasts in the NHL Podcast Network. Jonathan Huberdeau and Matthew Tkachuk went different ways in the trade. They were both on the same show with Darren Millard and the Chirp. And then Zach Werenski and Austin Matthews, the reigning goal scoring leader in the NHL, were on At the Rink with Dan Rosen and Sean Rourke. So two great shows to check out before the start of the season.
Boogity boogity. Let's get going, Petey.
So opening night is technically Friday and Saturday, but then we got the big slate next Tuesday with the Rangers and the Lightning and the Kings and the Golden Knights. So it's coming up right on the horizon. Remember to leave us a review, support the show, Apple Podcasts, NHL Fantasy Facebook page, and also Spotify. Check us out on Instagram at NHL Fantasy, Twitter, same deal. Check out the NHL Fantasy Draft Special on NHL Network. Myself and Anna Dua were on that. And really looking forward to the start of the season. So for Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen, talk to you next time. NHL Fantasy on Ice.